I'd like to call the meeting of Rules and Legislative Administration to order and say welcome back to the State Office Building. It's nice to see some of you in person. Nice to see some of you on television.
Yes.
And I'm glad we're back. We have just a couple of administrative things to do today. And you will see in your packet the information about our committee budgets and about staff compensation, and that's what we'll be dealing with today. I also want to let everybody know that there's a per diem form in your packet, and if you're going to complete those, if you could get those back to us today, that would be super helpful. Representative Benson, would you like to move the minutes?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes for Monday, May 20th.
Representative moves the minutes for Monday, May 20th. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted. We have Mr. Reinholds here and Ms. Knight. And if you'd like to come up to the committee table, welcome to the committee. We'll take these up in order. And I think I would like to begin, if we could, with the committee budgets, which is the R11A resolution for members, if you're following along in your packet. And so I'd like to move the R11A resolution for consideration. Mr. Reinholds.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this resolution is will be increasing the 2013-14 committee budgets and the minority caucus budget. If you recall, back in January, the a minimal amount was given to each committee. There is a spreadsheet that shows the amounts in the resolution that would be available for each committee for their expenses, and Madam Chair, I would be happy to answer any questions.
Members, other questions for Mr. Reinholds? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Reinholds, when I'm looking at the committee budgets overall, and one, we have more committees now, and I'm seeing on here, we had a balance left over from 2012 of $112,783. Where did that money go? And is that just piled into the 287, or is that on top of the 287? And also, can you give us a report of how much each of these committees have spent to date since their inception here of January?
Mr. Reinholds.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, any budgets that were for 2012 expired at the beginning of the year, those then just go back into the House budgets. They're not rolled forward into any committees. There was actually for 2011 and 12, $158,000 was budgeted for committees. $79,197 was spent. The balance just went back to the bottom line in the House budget. As spending, I do not have the current expenditure report with me on those committee budgets. I certainly can get that to you. It's been minimal spending, which is normal during session. But definitely, that report was sent out. Was a report sent out last month updating everyone on their committee budget. But I definitely can get you the copy of all the committees, and we'll send you.
Madam,
it has been very small, as normally.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Reinholds, if you could also then, I would like to see a comparative analysis of, say, over the last, let me give you maybe 8 years of committee budgets and what they have been for each of the different committees and what was allocated, what was appropriated, and then what was actually spent. If I could get that analysis, I think that would be helpful for us in moving forward. I know when looking at some of these, we have a significant increase in the budgets. And I'm just curious, too, and I'll save some questions here if other members have questions, Madam Chair, but there are some questions that I have for you later, too. So If I could get those reports, that would be really helpful, Mr. Reinholtz.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson certainly can get that to you. We have those numbers.
Perfect. We do indeed, Mr. Reinholtz. Are there other questions? Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Reinholtz, just to make sure I understand, so the proposed budget here for the committees in the Minority Caucus is $287,000, and in the last biennium, we spent $79,000. So the difference in what we are going to spend in the next biennium versus, or in the next budget, committee budget, will be $287,000. The last budget was $79,000.
Mr. Reinholtz.
Madam Chair, Representative Woodward, I do not know what will be spent in the current biennium. I know what will be budgeted is $287,000. So historically, not all the money is spent. As I said in response to Representative Anderson, $158,000 was budgeted, $79,000 were spent.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just as a quick follow-up, so if we go budget to budget then, it's $158,000 in the last budget cycle versus $287,000. So we've got a $130,000 increase in committee budgets. I just want to make sure I've got that right.
Madam Chair, Representative Woodard, that is correct.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome, Representative Woodard. And just for some perspective, in 2001 and 2002, the amount approved was $735,000 for committee budgets. In 2003 and 2004, $322,000 appropriated. In 2005 and 2006, $337,000 approved. So I think that in 2007, 2008, $664,000. In 2009, 2010, $586,000 budgeted and approved by the Rules Committee for the committee budget. So there has been some variability. I would say that we are coming in above the majority in the last biennium. Of course, we were in the height of the Great Recession, and we had seen a retraction in much spending, both in terms of staff compensation and committee budgets in that period of time. We saw that beginning in 2008, but we are well below the majorities, the GOP majorities in the earlier part of the decade. Well below the DFL majorities before that, and when I was in the majority the first time in 2007 and 2009. So I would say, while this budget that's being proposed is certainly higher than what was the last, we are below, certainly, the budgets that we've seen come out of both the Democratic majorities and the GOP majorities over the last decade and more. Are there questions? Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a question for you or to staff you'd like to defer. Again, my first time on the Rules Committee, but has there ever been a practice in which committees have come back to the Rules Committee if they need additional funding? I guess in just looking at this, we don't have all the historical data that Representative Anderson has asked for, and you provided some of it. The committee budgets, you know, having been much larger in previous bienniums and perhaps when more money was available. But, you know, even under a more austere budget for the previous biennium, about half of that was spent. So, I mean, wouldn't it perhaps be a prudent move to look at reducing these but allowing committees to come back to the Rules Committee if there were some circumstances that warranted reconsideration of their budget? I just do have a concern with us appropriating or designating large amounts of money that seem to really not be spent from year to year, and it continues to stay in the legislative budget. Frankly, I'd like to see some of that go back to the Department of Revenue and to the state's treasury, if that's a consistent pattern from year to year.
Thank you, Representative.
So, just a question. I just wondered if there was some kind of a process where the committees, the chairs, can come back to the Rules Committee if there's a problem with their budgets.
Representative Reinholtz? Mr. Reinholtz.
Sorry about that. Representative Bloom, I don't have a long history in the control position. In the time I've been there, we have always given a small amount in the beginning of the two-year period and then increased it about this time as interim came. Most of this money is spent during interim. Obviously, any resolution could be brought forward to increase or decrease these budgets at any time to the Rules Committee. So there is possible to change this, yes.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair and Representative Loon, it has happened. It's rare that a committee chair has come forward. I remember the first time when I was on rules where that happened, we were actually tied. So it was a Mary Forsyth who chaired the Health and Human Services Committee. Unexpectedly, some issues broke out in that field, and they had to have some additional hearings, and so she came back very legitimately and requested an increase in her budget to accomplish what needed to be done with various issues. So it does happen, but it's rare.
Thank you. I have Representative Anderson, Albright, and Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, Representative Carlson, I'm glad that you said something here, because I look at your budget in particular, and you're looking at an $8,000 increase for the Ways and Means Committee. And I'm wondering, Madam Chair, why the Ways and Means Committee would need an additional $8,000. Typically, the Ways and Means Committee is kind of responding to all the other finance committees and their issues, and they're not necessarily, I don't ever remember Ways and Means meeting during the interim. Is it the intent of the chair to meet, or what would this additional $8,000 in their budget account for? I'd just be curious in what Representative Carlson's plans are for the $8,000 increase.
Well, yeah, Madam Chair, historically Ways and Means has met. I would just point out it happens to be the largest committee in the Minnesota House, 34 members. And if you look at the various budgets, that would probably allow for, if you had good attendance, 3 to 4 meetings over the entire 18 months, basically, that remains. If you look at some of the other smaller budgets, the committees are also smaller, and they would probably typically be able to have roughly the same number of meetings. It's a little bit hard to predict what the attendance would be at a given meeting. But if you had a high-profile issue and everybody was coming, it would be, just the per diem alone would be $2,244 plus transportation and what have you. Ways and Means has met in the interim. As the chair pointed out, we were dealing with the Great Recession, and the budgets were much smaller, and the number of hearings were limited. But it's a result of that. But I've had a number of budgets for various committees through the years, and never overspent. In fact, every single budget I've ever had, we've never really used the entire amount. But I think you have to keep in mind this would be roughly 3, maybe 4 hearings.
Okay, thank you, Representative Carlson. Madam Chair, you know what's interesting about this, though, is some of the statistics that we've heard here today were during budget years that we actually had surpluses, and we had a deficit here of $627 million. Taxes were increased by $2 billion, and now we're increasing by $130,000 our own budget. I'm wondering, Madam Chair, can you give me, I can't remember, and I was wondering if you can help me out, What is the membership on the Select Committee on Living Wage Jobs? How many members do we have on that committee?
Representative Anderson, I don't have my green book with me. I don't know how many members are there.
Perhaps Mr. Reinholz can help me out.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I do not have a listing of the committees with me. I'm not sure how many members are on there. Obviously, it's in the green book online. We can get you that.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Reinholz. Madam Chair, perhaps the page can get me a green book so I can go and see and take a look at the committee membership. I'm also interested in knowing what the committee membership is on the Select Committee on Veterans Housing and the Select Committee on Synthetic Drugs. I think Representative Loon actually serves on that committee. Do you remember offhand how many people are on the Select Committee on Synthetic Drugs?
Representative Loon.
Oh, thank you. No, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I am not on the Select Committee on Synthetic Drugs, but on Living Wage. And I'm trying to recall how many members we have. I'll try to add up and let you know.
Thanks. Because, you know, Madam Chair, what I'm curious, you know, Representative Carlson had said that Ways and Means has 34 members and that's the reason why we need so many. Well, if you tally up Living Wage Jobs, they've got 7,000 allocated. Veterans Housing has 5,000. Synthetic Drugs has another 5,000. I'm guessing that they have a significantly smaller membership than the Ways and Means Committee. And you know, I just think that's kind of interesting. These are committees that we've never had before that are not even full committees, recognized as full committees as this legislature. And given the fact that we did have a deficit this year, you know, I think it's not prudent for us to increase our House budget by $130,000.
Representative Albright. Welcome back.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome.
Being kind of a numbers guy, I'm looking at these, and either for the Chair or for Mr. Reinholz, I'm wondering upon what basis are these budgets prepared? Is it an estimate based upon, as Representative Carlson suggested, the number of meetings that are going to be held during the interim? Or is it based upon quantifiable work that each committee needs to complete during the interim? I'm just wondering if either you, Madam Chair, or Mr. Reinholz would be able to answer that question. I have a follow-up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Representative Albright. And I have worked with a number of our chairs and the speaker to put together this budget. And the one thing that I have learned in my 10 years serving in the legislature is to govern well. It is important to be in contact with Minnesotans. And especially in my work in Health and Human Services over the number of years that I have been here, being able to have a field hearing to talk about the impact of epidemics, flu, post-traumatic stress disorder, other issues that are facing Minnesotans was a very important way to gather real information from Minnesotans as we were thinking through solutions. And so, at least from my perspective, as I contemplated these budgets, I thought it would be important to give committees enough of a budget so that if they wanted to have a field hearing or two, and trust me, there's not a lot of budget here for those committees to do more than maybe two or possibly three hearings over the interim, but to allow the committees to be able to work with Minnesotans to gather real information from Minnesotans so that we are able to make informed decisions as we're moving forward through the legislature. From my perspective, I place a very high value on that. I don't think that we should be making decisions in isolation. We certainly have contact, each of us, with our constituents, but our committees have jurisdiction over certain areas of policy, and there is a value in those committee members together getting out into Minnesota and actually experiencing what Minnesotans are experiencing. And that's the reason why we have put some money into the committees so that they can do that work over the interim. So together as a legislature, we can reflect the perspectives of Minnesotans, and so can the policy that we're passing through.
So with that in mind, then I'm just
right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With that in mind, then I'm looking specifically at the rules budget from last biennium, which was $4,300, and now we have $15,000 proposed, which is a threefold increase. And I'm just wondering, from a standpoint of, are we anticipating visiting Greater Minnesota as a rules committee, or where does that budget take us in terms of anticipating how we'll spend that?
Representative Albright, I don't anticipate that the rules committee is going to do a lot of field hearings, but we may have some more administrative work to do. We are the administrative body, and it is a fairly large committee and fairly expensive to bring you all in. And so that is, you know, to make sure that we're, you know, prepared to do our work. And, you know, I do think, having once run an organization, that you need to prepare. Budgeting is about preparing for the work ahead of us. And that's what we're doing today. And while I understand that, you know, we could think about the budget and, you know, make these skinnier and have people come back and make requests if they don't have adequate funds to do the work that they need to do, I think it is a more prudent management style to prepare ahead, to pass a budget, knowing that, and we do have some history of not always spending all those budgets, knowing that there's a mechanism then to cancel that and put that back into the House budget in a meaningful way. So that's what we're doing. We're preparing, planning.
And I appreciate the answer. I think it is incumbent upon us as legislators to, you know, anticipate expenditures prudently and neither to, you know, shoot beyond, obviously, you know, being good stewards of the people's money, but neither to undershoot and underestimate what's expected. So the diligence that we're providing here, I think, is important just to make sure that we're being as we're recognizing what is necessary, neither higher nor low, but being responsible and being reasonable and prudent with what the budgets are going to be. So thank you.
You're welcome. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious as to how our budget compares to the other body of the legislature. I don't know if Mr. Reinholz would have any information regarding that.
Mr. Reinholz.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, I do not. I have not seen a budget from the Senate. They are typically a little bit reluctant to hand out a lot of detail on their budgets, and I'm not even certain if they have passed for the 1450.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, that information is not public information.
Mr.
Madam
Reinholz.
Chair, Representative Torkelson, there are certain parts of the legislative budget that is public information. Detailed breakout is not necessarily part.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I would assume that since they're half our size, they would have half our budget, but I don't know about that for sure.
Nor do I, Representative Portman.
That's awesome.
I have Portman, Pepin, and Happy on the list. Representative Portman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank you for what I think is a really responsible budget. You outlined the numbers from 2000 forward, and I think given the different budget circumstances, this is a responsible budget. Just for a frame of reference, and I know some of the Republican members here were chairs in the last biennium, so you know, but we've done the math for the Energy Policy Committee. We have 15 members. To have one hearing is $1,494.15. So the budget that Representative Murphy has put forward would allow our committee to have three hearings outside of the session times, and I think that that's a responsible and appropriate level of funding for our committee. I don't know if we'll use the money or if we'll be remitting some back, but I think it's a responsible level of budgeting. And when you look at a committee like Ways and Means with 34 members, and some of whom come from much further distance than members on my committee, it's pretty expensive just to have one hearing, and I think we need to be prepared. We don't know if there'll be floods or droughts or reasons for us to come together, and I think this allows us to be prepared for those. So, thank you.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm wondering about, as Representative Anderson was, about the three select committees, and I'm wondering if those committees have the power to take legislative action. In other words, if they have the power to hear bills, if they are treated the same way as the other legislative committees on the list.
Representative Pepin, you're jogging my memory. So I believe that they can certainly take up a bill, hear it. I think that it would need to go to another committee of jurisdiction before it can move through the legislature. And Representative Loon, who's serving on a select committee, is nodding her head. I believe that is correct. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question then is to Mr. Reinholz. I'm wondering if this is, if this has historically been done where we've had committees that don't have the authority to take legislative action to fit into the same budget, or if they've had a budget in the past, such as the other official legislative committees.
Madam Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin, yes, that has been done in the past, that the committees that are not part of permanent rules have.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholz. Can you recall which committees those might be, which
Madam
select
Chair,
committees are?
Mr. Reinholz.
Representative Pepin, I will have to go back and look at the records, but I do recall the paper.
Representative Pepin.
Thank you. If you could provide that information, that would be helpful.
Thank
Mr. Reinholz.
Mr. Reinholz. Thanks, Representative Pepin. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't have a question, but I don't have a green book either, but I did go to the Google. For Representative Anderson's question, the Select Committee on Controlled Substances and Synthetic Drugs, Chair Simonson and Representatives Lohmer, Neuberger, Schoen, and John Ward.
Thank you, Representative Hoppe, and way to use the internet, especially here in the basement. Are there other questions?
Right.
Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion on the resolution on committee budgets.
Oh, Madam Chair, could we have a roll call on this one?
Representative Anderson representing, requesting a roll call. It'll just take us one moment. Just let me know when you're ready. I am ready. We're good. All right. Roll call being requested.
Okay. Representative Murphy.
Aye.
Representative Albright.
No.
Representative Anderson.
No.
Representative Benson.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Doubt.
No.
Representative Earhart.
Yes.
Representative Hansen.
Yes.
Representative Hoppe.
No.
Representative Hortman.
Aye.
Representative Lincheski.
Aye.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Loon.
No.
Representative Pulowski.
Aye.
Representative Pepin.
No.
Representative Purcell.
Aye.
Representative Torkelson.
No.
Representative Woodard.
No.
Representative Zellers.
No.
There being 11 ayes and 9 nays, the resolution is adopted. Thank you, members. I would like to move on to the resolution R3A1 dealing with expense reimbursement. It is in your packet. Mr. Reinholz.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the R3A1 amendment is related to resolution on expense reimbursements for the members. R3 was passed in January. This is amending that. The amendments are indicated with stricken and underlined language, appear on page 1. What it is doing on line 10, currently the housing maximum monthly housing for non-Metro members is $1,200. This is changing that to $1,300 per month. And the current policy is to fund a max for the 2 years of 18 months, so that on line 11, the max for the the biennium is increased then to $23,400. Then the line beginning on page 11, or line 11, page 1 through line 14, what this is doing is allowing those indicated members will be allowed to have year-round lodging if they are outside the metro, the 50 miles required outside of the capital. Madam Chair, that's the change being proposed.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholz. Are there questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Reinholz, so if I understand correctly, instead of being a maximum of 18 months, that would be 24 months for the people mentioned, the leaders and committee chairs, if they're outside of the 50-mile limit?
Mr. Reinholz.
Madam Chair, Representative Hoppe, correct.
Thank you.
Seeing no further questions, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say no.
No.
And that motion is adopted. I would like to move on to the R21 resolution. This is the resolution on compensation of House employees. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Knight. And if you could walk us through this, the document, it would be exceptional.
Madam Chair and members, the resolution on compensation of House employees has a variety of parts. The first piece of this is a lump sum equity adjustment that applies to those staff who have been continuously employed since January 1 of 2011 and is effective on January 1 of 2012. This is a lump sum equity adjustment and does not go into the base salary. The second piece of this is effective January 1, 2013, and employees shall receive, each permanent employee shall receive a general increase of 2%. Committee stipends are also increased by 2%, and the maximum of the range. The minimum, however, is not affected. each employee then who has been continuously employed with the legislature since January 16th of 2012 is also eligible to receive an equity adjustment of 3.5%. And the equity adjustment does not apply to committee stipends or extra duty pay. The January 1, 14, and 15 increases are very similar. Each permanent and temporary employee shall receive an increase of 2%. Committee stipends are increased by 2%. In addition, the ranges, both the minimum and maximum, are impacted by that and increase 2%. In addition to that, then employees who have a performance rating of meets expectation or better is eligible for a merit increase of up to 3.5%. However, the department pool will be 3.5%. An employee who consistently exceeds is eligible for up to 4%. However, that department pool still is at 3.5%. The same is true for the January 1 of 2015, but just the difference being that the in order to be eligible for the merit increase, employees have to be on continuously employed since January of 2014 versus January 1 right. of 2013.
Thank you, Ms. Knight. Are there questions? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I'm looking at this first section, if I'm reading this correctly, let's just use an arbitrary number that would consider any salary. But if you're earning, just for simple math, $100,000 and you receive a 2% general increase, that gives you a $2,000 increase. That then, if I'm looking at line 20 and you receive an equity adjustment increase of, let's say, the maximum here of 3.5%, when you move to the next year of 2014, is that general increase of 2% based upon the 2% and the 3.5%?
Ms. Knight. Representative Murphy and Representative Albright, that is correct. It, for the January 1, 13 increase, the January 1, 14 increase is on top of that.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. And that would then include then the increases that are noted on page 2 of 3 on lines 12 and 13 under the changes for salary compensation in 2015.
Ms. Knight.
Yes. Representative Murphy, Representative Albright, that is correct.
Thank you.
Ms. Knight, can you remind us again how long it has been since the employees of the House have had any salary increases?
I'll figure it out.
Please.
Other than Representative Murphy and members, other than employees who took different positions within the House, the last time House staff had a pay increase was in 2008.
Are there questions? Representative Earhart.
Madam Chair, I wonder if she could remind us of the last time the legislators had an increase.
I don't know that Ms. Knight has the answer to that question off the top of her head, but I can tell you, Representative Earhart, it's been a really long time. Yeah. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Knight, can you tell me what would be the maximum increase provided an individual received the maximum merit pay of the 4%? What is the maximum increase that we'd be talking about percentage-wise? If you tack on the 2, the 3.5, and then I'm assuming the 4, if I'm understanding you correctly. Is that the total then? You would have a 5.5 plus the, as we're talking, 9.5% increase then, or is it more than that?
Ms. Knight.
16% maybe?
Representative Murphy, Representative Anderson, the 3.5% is separate from the 4%. That is for employees that have a rating of meets or better. That's for the department pool. They do not get the 3.5 and then the 4%. So if 3.5 is given to a pool of money to a department, if one employee gets 4%, then someone else is going to have to get less than that 3.5. Mm-hmm. So, but for an employee if they receive the 4%. In that cycle, they would receive the 2% and the 4%.
Okay, so a maximum of 6% in 2013. Is that for 2014, I assume?
Representative Murphy, Representative Anderson, that is correct.
And then for 2013, Madam Chair, for 2013, we're looking at 5.5%.
Representative Murphy, Representative Anderson, that's correct.
Okay, and then for 2015, what are we up to there? That's another, Madam Chair, Ms. Knight, that's another 5.5% there, too.
Representative Murphy, Representative Anderson, that January 1, 2015 is a mirror of January 1, 2014. So, again, that is the 2% general increase and up to maximum of 4%.
So if, Madam Chair,
Representative Anderson,
Ms. Knight, if I'm understanding correctly, if you meet all of these qualifications, you have the potential of earning 17.5% increase by the 2015, correct?
Ms. Knight. Representative Murphy, Representative Anderson, I didn't just add that up in my head, but that sounds...
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Knight. So, again, there's some one-time equity salary increase. There is a 2% base salary increase. And then there's the potential for merit pay based on performance evaluation by the supervisors and then decision-making done by those supervisors about merit pay. Is that accurate?
Yes, Representative Murphy, that is correct.
Thank you.
No way.
Are there other questions? Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I was wondering if Ms. Kelly or someone might have... could remind us of what the general consumer price index increase has been since 2008. Does anyone have that number?
Ms. Knight?
And the reason I ask the question, of course, is because the way I think of it, one ought to subtract that, or at least have that in consideration when one looks at compensation, since the cost of living increase eats up, as I think most working people understand, the actual buying power that they receive with any increase in pay.
Ms. Knight?
Representative Murphy, Representative Benson. Unfortunately, I do not know that off the top of my head.
Members, I think, you know, as we contemplated this budget, we did look at the comparable treatment of employees in the executive branch and through the labor contracts that were already moved through the legislature. I know that we are not necessarily competitive with the private sector, especially when we think about those at the top of the income scale and what we see in the private sector in terms of corporate compensation. But it has been, you know, now 5 years since the employees of the Minnesota House have had any salary increase, and we think it is important, and I'm sure most members of the committee believe it's important that to retain the talent that we have and the expertise, that it's important to continue to consider their compensation going forward. So I do think that what's being proposed here is in line with other branches of government and the experience of lots of people in Minnesota. And with that, we have a couple more people on the list. We have Representative Hoppe, Representative Lilly, and Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am wondering if I could make a brief, very brief, one-number oral amendment to the R21 resolution. And what I'm hoping to do is on line 9 of page 1, after the number 1, after January 1st, add in a 6 to make it January 16th instead of January 1st. And, Madam Chair, I'll give a brief explanation of why I'd like to do that. It's on the R21 resolution on page 1, line 9, and I'm hoping to make that January 16th because that makes it the same as the date in or on line 19 and line 29 of the same of page 1 of the R21 amendment. And I think we have extreme good fortune here in the House, both in the House Republican Caucus, the House DFL Caucus, and certainly in our nonpartisan staff, that we are blessed with a lot of great employees, and the state of Minnesota and the people of Minnesota are blessed with a lot of great employees. And honestly, I say that even when you're not all sitting here. What I'm hoping to do is change that and get everybody to go along to that, and I have no idea who or what the number might be, but January 1st, 2011 was roughly corresponding with the date. I don't remember the date of session when it started, January 4th or 3rd, something that year. And if we have January 16th, 2012 and January 16th, 2013, why not go January 16th, 2011? I don't know who, that might not apply to anybody, but just for the sake of continuity and bringing other people within the fold, I'd like to offer that oral amendment, and I stand to take any questions.
Representative Hoppe offers an oral amendment, and I am going to look to our staff to see if we can understand the implication of that. I don't know if you can, if you can share with us the impact that would have at this point. I know it's
Representative Murphy, Representative Hoppe, and members. I don't know how many people would be affected, but Representative Hoppe is absolutely correct that any staff that were hired that were new to the House, just beginning with that legislative session, would be included, that were hired between, the, let's say, the beginning of session and that January 16th date. I don't know how many that affects, but there would be some.
Ms. Knight, is it possible that there were employees hired between January 1st and January 15th that would be excluded at this point because of the correct amendment?
Yes, Representative Murphy, that is correct.
And Representative Hoppe, what is the intention then of the amendment?
Well, I wasn't intending to exclude anyone, and I honestly don't know numbers. I don't know, and I should probably have looked this up, if this would apply to, my suspicion is there would be more GOP members, because that's when we went into the majority, but I honestly don't know. There's probably some of from each caucus, but I don't know. And I don't know if anybody here would know. I don't want to call and pick on Mr. Charbonneau, or I don't see Ms. Anderson here from our caucus, but my only thought was, I didn't want to exclude anybody, but my thought was to include people that started then and would still be working here.
Okay, Representative Hoppe, I think that we would be limiting rather than expanding through your amendment, and I'm not sure that's what your intention is. There are a couple extra questions. There's Ms. Knight is ready to chime in, then we'll get to Representative Woodard.
Representative Murphy, I think that, you know, I misunderstood what you were saying. This would expand that. There would be people that were hired between that January 1 and January 16 date that would be included with what Representative Hoppe is doing that are not currently included.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would add to that, and I would never contradict Ms. Knight. I've learned that over the years. I would just add, we think. I don't know. My assumption is there are people, but I don't know for sure.
All right. I've got Representative Portman. Oh, excuse me. I want to go to Woodard.
That was my question.
Portman, and then Representative Dow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could either of the staff identify how much money that would be? I mean, I don't know. It could be a large number of people, and so it could be a pretty significant change in it. I don't know if I presume that the math has been done, and I don't know if the money would be there to make that change. Is my only concern that when we do things on the fly like this and we don't have the numbers in front of us, how much money are we talking about spending, and do we have that money?
Mr. Reinholtz?
Madam Chair, Representative Horman. It's impossible for me to come up with a total if I do not know the number of staff, and I do not, in the top of my head, know the anniversary date of all the staff of the House. Obviously, it could be looked at and calculated. If you look at it, it's 3.5%. It's going to be between $2,000 and $3,000 for most employees. So it would be about that cost of money per employee.
Mr. Reinholtz, we don't have any idea right now how many employees that would be?
Madam Chair, I do not know how many employees that would add to be eligible for that lump sum equity at this time. No, obviously, count.
Representative Doubt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm gonna try this and hope that my voice cooperates. I've lost my voice today, so this is something that when we went through this amendment or this resolution yesterday, I didn't catch this, but Representative Hoppe actually raises a pretty interesting point. And if you look at line 19 and line 29, both of those provisions of this resolution hit employees that have been continuously employed since January 16th, 2012 and January 16th, 2013, respectively. So, you know, what that leads us to believe is that, you know, obviously when the House hires employees that are new for a legislative session, their pay begins on the very first day of the legislative session. So on line 9, that January 1st, 2011, means that people who were hired for that legislative session will not meet that requirement. And obviously, I'm certain this was an oversight and not the attempt, but I don't know either. I haven't looked at any list of what employees would be affected by this or not affected or impacted. But the Republican caucus hired quite a few employees within a week after, you know, within days after January 1st, 2011, their first pay date would have been, I think the 4th or something like that was the first day of session, if I remember back a couple of years. So their first pay date would have been 3 days later than this date. So I guess my question, I don't know who I'm asking this question to, maybe it's you, Representative Murphy, why was January 16th selected in the two following provisions, but January 1st was selected in the first one? And is it seems to me this might just be a common sense thing that would mean that we're not trying to select out some employees who started 3 days after this date.
Representative Dowd, I don't think there's any intention behind it. I'm just trying to understand what the cost would be to the change. Yep. And, you know, my intention would be to treat our employees equally and fairly. It's just hard to make the amendment here. I wish we would have caught it yesterday so we could have costed it out. And I know Ms. Knight and Mr. Reinholtz are conferring up there. I'm not sure that they can get us any better information before we have to make this decision. Ms. Knight.
Representative Murphy, I'm attempting to get that information from our office.
All right. Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I hope this is a helpful suggestion. Would it help if I tabled this amendment or we tabled the resolution for right now and moved on to other things that are in our packet? And would that give us enough time to find out the information?
It would. Representative Dowd had a couple more questions. If we could take that and then we'll lay it over and come back to it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question for you was, why was the 16th of January? And maybe this is a question for staff, and you can certainly refer to them if there's a reason for it. But why was January 16th chosen in the two later provisions, but January 1st was chosen in the first one? What was the reasoning that the dates aren't consistent?
Representative Doubt, as you indicate, I think it's just an oversight.
Okay.
Representative Lesh?
Pedersen.
Representative Lilly?
I was just, Madam Chair and members, I was going to speak in favor of the R21, so it's not related to the amendment.
All right. Representative Hansen?
Not related to the amendment.
All right. So what I'd like to do is lay over the R21 until we can get back to it with better information and move forward. All right. Everybody with us? Ms. Knight, let's look at the P4. So let's look at the policy on promotional adjustments in a job series.
Representative Murphy and members, this is the policy on promotion adjustments in a job series. We have a number of staff who are in what we refer to as series jobs, where they can move from a 1, 2, 3, or 4 through the range. This is very similar to our previous promotional adjustment that had been suspended, with a few exceptions. On line 11, you will notice that the employee must have at least 3 years of continuous house employment. That's a change. Before it was 2 years. It's now been moved to three. And the one exception for that is on line 13 for movement to the fourth level for legislative analysts and fiscal analysts. That remains 4 years. That's the only difference. Also on line 23, the increase for an employee that moves to the next level in their promotional series is 4%. That is a change from 5. And then in addition to that, on line 24, if an employee were to receive an increase for promotion in job series, they would then not be eligible for a merit increase for the 12 months following the effective date of that. Those are the changes.
Thank you, Ms. Knight. Are there questions? Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, and being a bit unfamiliar with, and this would be a question for Ms. Knight, could you just explain or give me a little bit better articulation on the scale of performance? In a number of these amendments, we talk about meets expectations. Is that, could you give me the range of the definitionals that when you're doing job performances that people are rated at, and what the expectation for a rating of, let's say, meets is as opposed to excels at, or what the range parameters are?
Ms. Knight. Representative Murphy, Representative Albright. That can range anywhere from needs improvement up to consistently exceeds. And in order to be eligible for the promotional opportunity, they have to have at least meets. If for some reason someone needed improvement, then the supervisor has the opportunity to postpone that date and can reevaluate at a future date when the performance has reached meets expectation.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so would it be my understanding that the meets is in the grading scale of say, you know, Scholastic, is that like a B+ or a B? Or where do we, you know, what is the intentionality for promoting someone? Is meets like C work or B+ work? Where do we stand on that?
Ms. Knight.
Representative Murphy, Representative Albright. That, for in order to receive a rating of meets expectations, they have to be satisfactory in all aspects of their job. So they have to be able to demonstrate that they're proficient at that job, at that level, before they can be promoted to the next. So I don't know what it would necessarily be on a grading scale, but they cannot have needs improvement in even some of the minor aspects of their position and still be promoted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions, Ms. Knight. So the 4%, then, that's on top of the other increases that we have listed in the R21, correct?
Ms. Knight.
Representative Murphy, Representative Anderson. I'm going to answer by saying yes and no, because yes, it would be on top of it. However, if someone got their promotional increase, let's say on July 1, they would not be eligible then for the merit increase on January 1, because they would not be eligible for a merit increase for the 12 months following that promotional increase.
Okay. And Madam Chair, Ms. Knight, when we're looking at this, what is the total, assuming that everyone gets that 4%, what is that cost at the high end? What would be the highest cost then for the House budget on this?
Mr. Reinholz.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, not everyone is eligible at one time. It takes 3 years in a position to move through that. And not all employees are in multi-level positions. we have employees that are in just one level positions also. The thing that when there is they get a 4%, they're not eligible for the merit increase for 12 months. Assuming the merit increase is 3.5 and the promotional is 4, the only difference to the House budget is the half a percent. And so it's on a typical employee. That is $300. So it is not a significant, the multi-level increases do not significantly affect this program of pay increases.
Representative Anderson. Madam Chair, Mr. Reinholz, but can you give me a cost? I'm sure that when you were putting these together, you had an idea of what this could potentially cost for the House budget. What was the low end? What was the high end? I know that we have 16 employees for the House that receive over $100,000 in compensation. So when we're looking at it, I'd like to see a range of what is the low end that you're anticipating when you're budgeting, and what do you think is going to be the high end? Because I'm assuming that you did that in order to put these numbers together today.
Mr. Reinholz.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I ran numerous scenarios on possibilities. They interact with each other. If you're at, that's what I'm trying to say. I can't sit here and break out a what if high low. Those raises interact with each other and affect each other. The multi level, when combined with the restriction on the merit increase for 12 months after, has the effect when they all work together of a very slight increase in this budget. It would be the 0.5% difference between the 4 and the 3.5 increase. I do not know at the top of my head how many of the people have multi-levels.
Madam Chair, Mr. Reinholz.
Representative Anderson.
If you don't know the high-low, can you at least tell me what you're budgeting for this?
Madam Chair, Representative, are you asking me what are we budgeting for this total package of increases?
Yep.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Reinholz, as you answer that question, can you make sure you are sharing with us what's in that bucket of this increases? Are you talking specifically about the multi-level?
Madam Chair, no, I'm not.
Right.
I'm not. My question back was, are we talking just about the multi-level or the entire increase? And I take it now that we've moved back to the previous resolution and are talking about the total increase, because I said I do not know, have broken out what the multi-level is. So.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Reinholz, all I'm asking for is, what are you budgeting for this? I mean, obviously you've had to do that because you have a fiduciary. You know, I know that you've done this. So that's all I'm asking for is, how much is this going to cost the House budget?
And yeah. Mr. Reinholz, if you want to answer the question about the salary increases.
Madam,
listening to you, that's what I'm hearing.
Madam Chair, I can then go back. Yes, the total package that was the resolution before us on that had the R21, that I estimate will cost in 14 and 15 approximately $2.8 million in increased salary costs.
Madam Chair,
Representative Anderson.
2014-2015, you're looking at $2.8 million increase in salary compensation, but that's just for the R21, correct? That doesn't include the P4, Mr. Reinholz.
Madam Chair, that includes the P4, yes.
Okay. And Madam Chair,
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Reinholz, that doesn't include like the housing portion that we did at all, or any of the other items that we have here. Is
Madam
that
Chair,
correct?
Representative Anderson, no, that is the estimated salary increase for 14 and 15.
Okay. And Madam Chair,
Representative,
this is beyond this amendment, but at some point, if we could get a better idea for each of these amendments, ballpark figure costs. I know that it seems that it's difficult on the 4%, but on the P4 one, but for the other ones, I think that would be helpful. I did have one more question, Madam Chair, and this is for Ms. Knight.
Representative Anderson.
In the P4, what we're looking at is we are going to, if I understand this correctly, we're saying that if you've been employed over the last 3 years, whoever is your current supervisor now will give you a rating based upon your performance today that includes the last 3 years, correct? But if you've changed departments, what happens there? What if you no longer have the same supervisor that you had from 3 years ago? How does that work?
Ms. Knight.
Representative Murphy and Representative Anderson. Oftentimes supervisors will compare notes, but this would be, let's say, someone moved from a committee administrator position to a research position or vice versa. Oftentimes they will compare notes with a previous supervisor if that is, if they have that opportunity to do so. But it's a snap, it's as of this moment in time. But they had to do the 3 years. They had to be in a position at that level for 3 years. But if they've changed supervisors, hopefully the records are there. If they're not, then they're going to be looking back for whatever period of time they've had to rate that person.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Knight, I have a little concern about that because I have seen situations where a supervisor has left and maybe has not kept those kind of records, and it hinders our supervisors in being able to evaluate an individual over a three-year period. So I do have concerns with that piece of it. I'll just leave it at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Then I would renew my motion on the resolution P4. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed,
aye.
Say no.
No.
And that motion is adopted. I would like to take us back off the table, the R21, which is dealing with the resolution on compensation for House employees. I want to thank... You good? I want to thank Ms. Knight and her staff for getting us some information. I understand there would be 15 employees that would be impacted by this change. And Representative Hoppe, I want to remind you about our 24-hour rule, and I want to, make sure it's clear that we're making an exception for you. But I do think that, this is an oversight, and it's fair that we consider this. And so if you'd like to make your motion again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your indulgence, and I appreciate the fact that it was an oversight, and I really didn't notice it yesterday. The motion was to amend the R21 resolution on line 9 of page 1 to add the number 6 after 1, so to make the date January 16th instead of January 1st, so it would be consistent with the dates in paragraphs 2 and 3 on lines 19 and 29.
Thank you. Is everybody clear on the motion? And I would like to ask for a roll call.
Representative Murphy.
Aye.
Representative Albright.
Aye.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Benson.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Aye.
Representative Doubt.
Aye.
Representative Earhart.
Yes.
Representative Hansen.
Yes.
Representative Hoppe.
Aye.
Representative Hortman.
Aye.
Representative Lincheski.
Aye.
Representative Lesh.
Aye.
Representative Lilly.
Aye.
Representative Loon. Representative Plowski.
Aye.
Representative Pepin.
Aye.
Representative Purcell.
Aye.
Representative Torkelson.
Aye.
Representative Woodard.
Aye.
And Representative Zellers.
Aye.
There are 20 ayes and 0 nays. That would be unanimous. The motion is adopted. Thank you. That's the amendment to the motion. Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and members, I just want to speak in favor of this R21 I had the honor or challenge, I consider it an honor to carry the contract bill, this a bunch of them this last session, and had some fun with some of my friends across the aisle and on my side of the aisle. And anyways, that being said, while you're doing that, I had a lot of hall conversations with other staff members that are House employees, and they just often said, you know, is there anything you can do for us? It's been quite a while. Can you help us out? And so I'm really glad that we're doing this. I think we're treating, you know, we're hiring good people, and they do a lot of good work, and we all appreciate that. I think of all the things that, looking over there at Mr. McCormick, he's and his team, but I've sent stuff up there, and they've said, oh, that's an okay idea. That's a good idea, and they've even had opportunities to say that's really a bad idea. So that's, I just really think it's, you know, hire good people and you treat them well. So I'm glad we're doing this, and it's not just our staff too. I very much appreciate on the DFL side, but I've had good relationship with the Republican researchers and staff members too, and I'm glad that we're treating them well as also. So. I hope that we can all support this, and I think we should bipartisanly.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did just want to check in with Mr. McCormick here that this resolution would cover the nonpartisan House research staff.
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, members, yes, this resolution covers all House staff. The Senate will set its own compensation and other matters, and I believe the Senate Rules Committee is scheduled for the last week of June, and the Legislative Coordinating Commission will set its compensation usually typically after the House and Senate adopts their compensation packages, and that will affect folks like the reviser of statutes, the reference library, Lassard Sams, and other Joint Commission staff, and those folks.
Representative Hansen.
And Madam Chair and Mr. McCormick, so it would also affect, say, the professional employees of the Legislative Audit Commission?
Madam Chair, yes. Madam Chair, members, those are also under the LCC and would be affected by the LCC package when that's adopted.
Representative Hansen.
And so, Madam Chair and Mr. McCormick, we would have our House resolution, which we're taking action on today, June 11th. The Senate is not planning on taking action until the end of June, and then the professional staff of the legislature that serve both bodies, they would then, there'd be an averaging or a cutting in half of what we do or what the Senate is, and then that would be for those employees to know what they would be receiving. That it's dependent on receiving action by the Senate.
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, in past years there has been an averaging or a look to what the House and the Senate has done to set the joint salaries and compensation. Greg Hubinger is here from the LCC if there are more questions. It doesn't have to be a strict averaging. It can be the LCC members themselves can adopt a compensation package that is more similar to the House or more similar to the Senate, or there can differ.
Representative Hansen.
And Madam Chair, so just for all members, so we've had our contracts approved for the executive branch. By taking action today and approving this, we're taking the partisan staff and the nonpartisan House staff, but there will be probably hundreds of employees that are up in the air until the LCC will act. And I think it's really important. I'm glad that we are meeting today. We have plenty of time before June 30th. I know that there are staff departing some of those places because of uncertainty and because of, you know, when you look at, following up on what Representative Lilly said, you know, if you have equity across different types of jobs. But I would just encourage the LCC to meet or take action sooner rather than later. I think it's a fairness issue to have them act, and I would hope that any action or inaction by the other body doesn't impact employees that serve us all and the people of Minnesota.
Representative Hanson, Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, I want to thank everybody for their support of the whatever that oral amendment was called, and Madam Chair, again, for your indulgence on bending that rule, and I appreciate it, and I would like to echo some of the things, not everything Representative Lilly said, that's dangerous, but the things he said about our staff, and I said this earlier, but the GOP staff, the DFL staff, and nonpartisan are great, and I appreciate everyone's support, and I plan to vote for the R21 amendment. Thank you.
Representative Hoppe, thank you. Are there any other questions? Seeing no further questions, Representative Portman?
Madam Chair, I'd request a roll call.
All right, Representative Portman. We'll renew my motion on the R21. This is dealing with compensation of House employees. Okay. Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Murphy?
Aye.
Representative Albright?
Aye.
Representative Anderson?
No.
Representative Benson?
Aye.
Representative Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Doubt?
No.
Representative Earhart?
Yes.
Representative Hanson?
Yes.
Representative Hoppe?
Aye.
Representative Portman?
Aye.
Representative Lencheski?
Yes.
Representative Lesh?
Aye.
Representative Lilly?
Aye.
Representative Loon?
No.
Representative Pawlowski?
Aye.
Representative Pepin?
No.
Representative Purcell?
Aye.
Representative Torkelson?
Aye.
Representative Woodard?
No.
Representative Zellers?
No.
There being 14 ayes and 6 nays, not unanimous, the motion is adopted. We are almost through our work. There are two resolutions left. We have the I think we have three resolutions left. We have the R19 on tuition reimbursement. Is that in our packets? Ms. Knight?
Madam Chair, that Ryan, one is mine. Madam Chair, members, if you recall, we adopted the budget in 12 and 13. Tuition reimbursement was put on suspended. Tuition reimbursement is a permanent rule, and the budget this year is intending to keep that suspended, and this resolution is needed in order for that to happen. It is not funded in the proposed 14-15 budget.
Are there any questions? Seeing no questions, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say no.
No.
And that motion is adopted. Thank you. The R20, the resolution on vacation hours conversion. Mr. Reinholz.
Madam Chair, members, this resolution is not have any direct budget effects. What it is, little background information first. The House pay system, previously to 2008, employees were paid basically on the end of the pay period. In other words, there was no delay in their paychecks. They were treated as salary employees. Used to be common quite a while ago to pay that way. In 2008, we switched to where all new employees are put on really a one paycheck holdback. That is more common. That's the way to pay employees these days. Back in 2008, we did not require current employees to go on to that system. The effect would be that they would they would have to wait 2 extra weeks or half a month for a paycheck. It would have caused some concern with employees, so it wasn't mandatory. But we did offer in 2008 the option to employees to take some leave time, either vacation or comp time, and basically turn that into a paycheck at the same time they elected to be put on what we call holdback in the House, which means their paycheck is delayed one pay period. A large number of employees did that. We now have 62 employees that are not on the holdback. Budget and accounting, the real effect of that is there is a lot of extra manual adjustments in that we have to do in budget and accounting for those employees every pay period. HR has the same problem. They do have to make a lot of adjustments. We're updating the software, and we're hoping to be able to update some of the software so that it will automatically move the numbers out of the time card into the payroll system and would save, be efficient for our office. In order to do that, we need to try to get more people, and hopefully all people, to take this. There is no budget effect. It is voluntary. We're probably going to do a little bit of education with some of the employees that will realize there is nothing negative likely in there for most employees, but we will not require anyone. So it's primarily to increase efficiency of both budget and accounting in the HR office.
Thank you, Mr. Reinholz. Other questions? Seeing no questions and no further discussion, I'll renew my motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, say no. And that motion is adopted. And the last resolution, the R22, dealing with changes to the Legislative Coordinating Commission book. Ms. Knight.
Representative Murphy and members, with the resolution of the contracts, we're bringing forward the LCC book, and this book is going to be for us just for the remainder of 2013 until we adopt a new book, which hopefully will be next January. But there are some minor changes in there. The language, you have the stricken and underlined language. On page one, there's just some correction of commission names. Page three, a minor adjustment for the effective date. Page eight, we just have some clarifying language. It offers no change to the current House practice, and this is all regarding the floating holidays. On page 18, there is a minor change to current House practice. The staff group that does this is comprised of the Joint Commissions, the House, and the Senate, and we have attempted to get all on the same page and have the same practice with this. What this is when an employee leaves, if they leave voluntarily, they receive 2% severance of their sick leave for every year, full year of service. One of the issues that we've run into is when staff come right before session on, let's say, January 8th, and then they leave on a January 4th time frame, they don't get that full year. They've missed it by 4 days. So what we're doing is we are also giving them credit for the full months. So they still wouldn't get the full year, but they would get 11/12. It's a minor change with a small benefit to staff, but this brings the House, the Senate, and the LCC in line with each other. Also, there's clarifying language regarding what happens to this severance when an employee is deceased. There seemed to be some confusion there. Unfortunately, the House has had these challenges, so we've put clarifying language in there. Page 19, for staff that have been with the House for a particular length of time, a portion of their severance goes into the health care savings plan. That is a plan that's a pre-tax plan managed by MSRS. When we were one of the first participants in this, and back then we had to have $1,000 in order to be able to outweigh the administrative costs with MSRS. Since that time, and many, many more participants in the plan, MSRS has agreed that we can now lower that threshold to $250. So an employee would have to have a minimum of $250 for that money to be transferred to MSRS. Page 23, there is a voting leave change. This just reflects a statutory change that the leave no longer needs to be taken prior to noon. On page 54, there is a change to the health and dental expense account. That is a change in federal law. The amount was reduced from $5,000 to $2,500 annually. And page 55, this is a change that was brought forward by staff. And this is relates to our deferred compensation plan. Staff have the ability to take and convert 40 hours of their vacation time and deposit that into the deferred comp plan. The previous versions of this required staff, in order to be able to convert 40, to actually use 80 hours for administrative ease and to encourage as many people as possible to put money in deferred comp. We're asking to remove that calculation, and staff can, regardless of what they've used, can put away up to 40 hours in a vacation time into the deferred comp plan. They do, however, have to make a choice. They either have to, they can take the match, or they can take up to 40 hours of vacation time, but they cannot do both. And then on page 55, there's a minor change. It's just a removal of some outdated language.
Thank you, Ms. Knight. Are there questions? Sarah, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Knight, I'm looking on page 23 on the voting time leave. Mm-hmm. Does this mean, is there a policy in another section that tells us how many hours then that a person could take off for voting time leave, or does this leave it up to if a House employee wanted to vote on that day and not do it outside of their work hours, could they be taking the entire day off then, or is there any limit on that at all? Or
Representative Murphy, Representative Anderson, there is no limit. Supervisors work with the employee to figure out what's reasonable, much like we do for a number of other leaves. I live in Roseville, so I think it would be unreasonable for me to take the entire day. And staff have been very good about taking a reasonable amount of time. We've not had anyone request the full 8 hours off.
Madam Chair.
Ms.
Knight, do you know statistically wise how many people actually take advantage of this at all? Or
Ms. Knight.
Representative Murphy, Representative Anderson, we don't have a lot of people who do that. Most people, I think, go either before they come to work or after work. So I don't have the statistics, but we don't have very many.
Okay. And then, Madam Chair, I had a question on the page 55. Can you talk to me a little bit more about Section A? And it looks like we're bumping that up to $500 per calendar year because we've crossed out the $400 per employee. Do we have a cost run on that piece of it at all? Or
Ms. Knight?
Representative Murphy, Representative Anderson. The language that we were moving was transitional language. That actually was increased in 2009 to $500. So what we were eliminating here was the transitional language.
Okay.
I do not have a cost for the deferred comp for the match. Perhaps Mr. Reinholz does for the match.
Excuse me, Madam Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson. By reinstating the deferred comp, I am estimating, based on the previous usage of that, and if you give me just a second here, $140,000 over the biennium.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Are there any questions? Is there any further discussion? No further discussion. Oh, I see a finger over there. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For Ms. Knight, on page 18, just a question to what was previous practice? Was there nothing in place? Was it last day plan? Last day really had to be in there for the whole year to get anything? Madam Chair?
Representative Murphy, Representative Albright, if someone had worked with us for 2 full years, they would then, and they left voluntarily, they would get 4% of their accumulated sick leave. If they worked 1 year and 364 days, they would have gotten 2%. So this would now, the change takes into consideration, they would get, you know, the 2% plus then 11/12 of whatever 2% is.
Representative Albright?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then on page 55, with regard to the election for the conversion of the vacation to deferred comp, mm-hmm. is that concurrent with their normal pre-tax election form, or is this, because I'm just wondering from a standpoint of, do they make that at the beginning of the year anticipating that they're not going to need it, or could they do that on December 15th of the same year? And I'm just wondering if that throws into question or might throw into question the maximal deferral for the year if they're already maximizing on the normal deferred compensation form, and then without knowledge they actually disqualify part of the deferral because they've thrown some of it in, they've converted some of their sick pay. I'm just wondering mm-hmm. if that's contemplated or what's anticipated by that move.
Ms. Knight.
Representative Murphy, Representative Albright, we actually do the match and conversion 4 times a year. We traditionally do it March 31st, June 30th, September 30th, and then December 31st. And we're in contact. We contact staff, especially those that are putting money away at a high rate. If they want to do, if you have somebody maximizing that and then they also want to do the vacation conversion, we encourage them to get that vacation conversion in by the September 30th. And then their deferred comp would just be cut off because they can't, even including this, can't exceed the maximum.
So, Madam Chair,
Representative,
so there's a cap or a flag mm-hmm. that delimits exceeding the annual maximum deferral.
Representative Murphy, Representative Albright, that's correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
And that motion is adopted. Representative Purcell, did you have a question? Well, it's been a slice of heaven to see y'all. Glad you're here. And I thank you for your hard work today. And with that, members, we are adjourned.